It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe that January has almost come and gone, depending on when you listen to this, either Saturday, January 30th at 9:05, right after the 9 o'clock news, or on Sunday, January 31st at 7:30. The road race scene has started again. There were races in Hopkinton, and then we had a race in Bedford through Millennium Running, the Delta Dental Points Chase Series. So we have figured out a way to, you know, run safely, like every industry, whether it's oral health and going to the dentist, whether it's visiting a museum. I mean, people have figured out different ways of remaining safe while continuing the industry. So again, big shout out to my running friends. Want to thank my guest last week, Paul Pearsall, who did a really nice introduction of what is called the Lions Twin State Cup game, which is the best soccer athletes in high school from Vermont versus New Hampshire. And that game actually is going to take place in July. So another industry, if you will, sort of high school sports that has been able to figure out how to safely navigate the virus. But this weekend with me is Bill Dunlop, who's the president of the New Hampshire Historical Society, has been there many years. So why don't we start with the history of the New Hampshire Historical Society, and before you get into the sort of the pivoting due to COVID, talk about the long and storied history of the New Hampshire Society, its mission, and how you got involved.
Sure, Tom. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
The New Hampshire Historical Society is a nonprofit organization, an independent one. And I start off by saying that because some people think we're a government agency because our building next to the State House sort of looks like a big granite government building. But we're a private 501c3 nonprofit. We were founded in 1823. So we're coming up on our 200th anniversary in a couple of years. We're the one of the very oldest nonprofit organizations in New Hampshire, or really in the country for that matter. We're a membership organization. We have about 3,000 members sign up. Anybody, any member of the public can sign up and become a member through our website. We have a museum facility at our building next to the State House. We have an extensive collection that includes over 2 million pages of manuscripts and archives, about 250,000 photographs, 35,000 objects, paintings, statues, furniture, wagons, Concord coach, you name it. So an extensive collection. And our main areas of focus are probably the primary one right now is education. We have a very active educational program, and we could talk about that a little more later. We have terrific publications. Our members get a magazine called Historical New Hampshire and newsletters and so on. And we also have exhibitions. And then a lot of our time and effort is spent just really taking care of these massive collections that we have. So that's kind of a thumbnail of the society.
Awesome.
I've been here a little over 10 years.
Yeah, you've been there a long time. I remember when you started there. We were first.
Yeah.
We were working on the governor's residence project. The People's
That's
House,
right.
Which has been totally revamped, and it's definitely pre-COVID used a lot for different events, mm-hmm. not just the holiday event, but a lot of others as well. So you were a big part of that. So before we get too far along in the program, since you are a not-for-profit relying on membership sponsors, why don't you get all that contact information out there and make a pitch for why I should become a member of the Historical Society?
Sure. Well, thanks for that opportunity. Obviously, like any nonprofit, we rely on our membership dues as well as a number of people contribute to our annual fund every year. We also get grants from foundations. All of that helps us do our work and fulfill our mission. We always think that there's a lot of benefit to somebody. You don't have to be a historian to be a member of the society. Really, anybody who loves the state of New Hampshire would find it a very interesting place to be a member of. to become a member, our website is a really powerful website. A few years ago, we had a major campaign, and we ended up investing several million dollars in the website. So we digitized a huge percentage of our collections, and we have a lot of other programming, videos and other taped workshops, lecture series, all kinds of things through the website. So I'd encourage anybody who's interested in becoming a member or considering becoming a member simply to go to our website, take a look, surf around, browse the collections. I think it's a lot of fun. And if anybody wants to become a member, they do it right there on the site.
And, of course, you and I know I'm going to ask this question. So I always, when we were chatting more informally, like, how do you determine, like, what's a value treasured? You know, that expression, you know, one man's or one person's treasure is another person's junk. I mean, in other words, do you get call? And I'm asking actually a serious question. Do you get calls from citizens saying, I've got, I don't know, a wagon wheel or some old painting in my garage? I mean, how do you make those determinations?
So we get those calls all the time. Literally every week there's a flow of material coming to us that's offered to us. And because we have finite, even though we have really big collection storage areas, it's still, it's finite. So we can't take everything offered to us. But typically what we do, we have curatorial staff people who look at an item and, assess its historical value, see if we already have a duplicate in the collection already, or possibly there's another organization where this item could be contributed to instead of us, and which is great because it stays in the public domain. So, for example, I was a few years ago, I got a call about a fairly important collection of letters and other material from a prominent person in Manchester, and we considered it, but we said, really this would be better placed at the Manchester Historic Association in Manchester. So we go through all that kind of a process, but we get a lot, frankly, a lot more offered to us than we can take. So we have to analyze it and, as I said, see how it fits in the collection, make sure it has good historical value, and then go from there. But it's a full-time job for a couple of people, really.
Oh, I'm sure. So we'll spend a little bit more time after the commercial break, but you'd mentioned education. Another thing that you and I have talked about a lot is the fact that it seems like when the fourth graders come to the State House that the level of knowledge isn't what it once was. And we had, of course, when I was chair of the State Board of Education and before that when I was just a regular board member of the State Board of Education, this had been a growing issue or challenge, because obviously children are just as smart as they've ever been, maybe more with technology, but if they haven't been exposed to the history, then as you had said to me, like, sometimes they don't even know the question to ask, you've really taken that on. So tell us a little bit how you're thinking on that and what it led to, things like the Democracy Project, and other initiatives.
Sure. So the Society's had a really great education program for New Hampshire school kids for decades now. We see over 10,000 school kids per year in an average year. Of course, this year, lately is not an average, but generally, you come to the Society on field trips. They often go to the State House, and then they come over to our building. We also deliver, we have seven or eight museum educators on our staff. They're part-timers who go out into the schools to deliver New Hampshire history programs. So we have a big involvement in history. And a few years ago, our education staff people came to me and said, we're noticing a real crisis that's emerging among kids not really knowing much about our national history. Kids, in fact, didn't even know what the American Revolution was. So I was pretty shocked by that. We met with some other nonprofits around the state, and the Society, the New Hampshire Historical Society, decided to launch a project called the Democracy Project, which was to create a robust new curriculum that's delivered 100% through the Internet for New Hampshire school kids. These are K through 6 kids primarily that the focus is. The new curriculum is named Moose on the Loose, and it's up and running now. It has been launched, and it's being adopted throughout the state. We're offering, we raised approximately $1 million to fund this project to develop the curriculum. We hired curriculum developers. It's a really cool, again, that's on our website, and any average person can go look at that. You just click on Moose on the Loose and take a look. It's all open. There's no passwords required. But very interesting, dynamic information to teach New Hampshire kids history, civics, and social studies in an interesting way. And frankly, nobody else was creating this new curriculum, so we stepped up and said, you know, this is our mission, we'll do it. And it's been really, I would say, the highest visibility and most successful project of the society in recent years. We're very proud of it.
Absolutely. And I actually, and this is one of your marketing techniques, I actually go on that website fairly regularly. I go on moose.nhhistory.org. I have the Moose, if you will, the iPad, Moose Pad, if you will. So I'm constantly, it's right in front of my face. And just to give the audience a little bit more background on that, so, the Hampshire Historical Society really did step up to the plate because there are standards in New Hampshire, English and Language Arts and math standards and, the Next Generation Science standards. But the history standards, through no one's fault, just resources, hadn't been updated in a while. And of course, history, on one hand, doesn't change necessarily, but how it's taught, as more details are known about certain events, it does need to be updated. And basically, this is an example of, if you will, public-private partnership. Obviously, as Bill mentioned, New Hampshire Historical Society is a 501c3, but really, stepped up to the plate. And this is a really state-of-the-art, resource. Again, moose.nhhistory.org. So when we return from commercial break, let's start there and talk about other upcoming events and exhibits for 2021 and also how you pivoted, as most not-for-profits and museums did during the pandemic, which is still with us. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio, this weekend of January 30th and January 31st, and with me is Bill Dunlap, who's the president of the New Hampshire Historical Society. Again, big shout-out to my running friends who are safely running in different Millennium events, as well as a series in Hopkinton. And, of course, a couple weeks ago, we had, Martin Luther King Civil Rights Day, and that, is a historical historical information that we should get out on that as well. And I know that when I've talked to my family about that, when I've educated, other stakeholders that I have, that there's a lot of information that people aren't aware. So to me, it's relevant that this weekend, January 30th and 31st, that we have Bill Dunlap, who is the president of the New Hampshire Historical Society. So you were saying before the break that you called it a crisis. I'll call it a challenge, that it was becoming very apparent that school-aged children didn't have, forgetting U.S. history knowledge, but New Hampshire history knowledge, and then that resulted in initiatives such as the Democracy Project and the New Hampshire History, moose.newhampshirehistory.org, resource. So it must be incredibly, you must feel really good that this has all come into being, because, it was definitely concerning that there was a lack of history. So you and Elizabeth and others on your team must feel really good about this.
Yeah, we do, Tom. And a couple of other points about this project. Well, first of all, I'd just say a lot of people feel like history, oh my gosh, it's musty, dusty, boring, et cetera. And there's a way to teach it that isn't just memorizing a bunch of dates and reading about a bunch of sort of, to some people, boring old guys. Really, history is dynamic, and you learn about how humans lived and all of our stories, and that helps us figure out how to live today. So history really has a value in helping people in a contemporary way, and the kids need this. One of the things we discovered, that we want to teach civics in 10th grade, let's say, But if kids haven't had some basic foundational information and knowledge about our state's history and American history and sort of how things work, you know, how our system of government works, how we got here, all of that needs to happen at a younger age. So that's why our curriculum is focused on, you know, K through six, big emphasis in grades 3, 4, and 5, to give them the foundation that they need to really learn about how to be citizens. So, yeah, we're very proud of it. One other point about it is that in addition to the new curriculum, we also have done teacher training or educator training. We've had, in the last two summers, we have had workshops for over 200 New Hampshire educators, classroom teachers, in the Moose on the Loose curriculum and on how to teach New Hampshire and American history more generally. So I think we feel like we're having a really big impact. And the fact that we've, you know, trained over 200 teachers, they have loved, in generally, they've loved this whole process themselves. So that's another aspect of it.
And, you know, when I was more involved with the state board, I did hear that that feedback. So let's pivot now to pivoting, which is, okay, so here we are. You know, I know my world changed on March 16th of 2020 when the American Dental Association said the recommendation was that you could only go to the dentist for emergencies. So basically, you know, in New Hampshire from March 16th to roughly May 11th, very few people were going to the dentist, and we used that period of time, March 16th to May 11th, to work with the New Hampshire Dental Society and many other stakeholders to develop the safe framework to go to the dentist. And what we've seen since May 11th is that people have really, in a good way, have flocked back to the dentist, and probably claims from like May 11th through the end of the year were probably about 90%, 90 to 96% of the pre-COVID norm. So a similar thing happened, obviously, for any organization that had a museum on-site type approach. So when roughly March 16th hit you, I mean, did you get the board together? What did you do to pivot, and how did that affect operations for 2020?
Sure. Well, we're like everybody else. We really had to make some big adjustments. As you mentioned, Tom, we have museum galleries in our building. We actually opened an exhibit on the 19th Amendment, women's suffrage, the women's right to vote. It opened the day that everything closed down. So that exhibit had been put in, installed, and it's never been seen by anybody because we've been closed ever since. So that's just an example of how things happen. The big impacts for us are the exhibits, and I mentioned the one, the suffrage exhibit. We have that one, but also we have a permanent exhibit in our building of White Mountain paintings, and another permanent exhibit of called Discovering New Hampshire that has a lot of really iconic artifacts in the state's history on display. So all those exhibitions, we made a decision to close the building down to the public. And we had most of our employees working from home most of the time. We have kind of a skeleton crew that comes into our buildings, spread out for social distancing, workstations really spread apart. We've been very cautious. We reopened in the summer by appointment only to accommodate researchers who come in and do, somebody may be researching their family history or working on a paper, if they're a student or something. So by appointment, we're accommodating people in our library, which is in our main building. But our galleries are continuing in a closed status. We're just taking it slow, but we just want to be cautious about the health of the public and our members and our staff. So that's where we are, and it was a bit of a financial impact on us, as it was with many others, but we're not as seriously impacted as some other places that are, say, performance venues like the Capitol Center, where, you know, they had to basically go black for a while, and that's a huge hit. So for us, it wasn't quite as bad. The other piece, though, is we did have to stop all of our school groups, and as I mentioned, there are about 10,000 school kids a year either coming to us or us to the classrooms, and all of that got shut down and has not started back up. One thing we did to accommodate that is we've created some virtual field trips, which are really terrific. They're very high quality, really high production values. We've just been launching those, and we're just going to sort of take it a month at a time about how quickly we can reopen the galleries.
Yeah, that's awesome. Great, great planning, and I think you're right. I mean, we feel the same in the dental industry. We weren't as we were obviously impacted, but not nearly as, let's say, the restaurant industry or, like you say, the performing arts. And so you were impacted, but in a more measured way. And I know, like, similar to like the Krista McAuliffe Planetarium, you're switching into the virtual, because you led into the question I was going to ask you. It's probably disappointing not to see all the smiling kids coming in, and from where I sit, you know, when I was on the State Board of Education, I mean, this is the real world learning that, you know, that we're looking for. And of course it was going like gangbusters, and then COVID hit, and obviously for safety, we've had to modify it. And I've had other, you know, I've had Mike Culver, who's the executive director of the Wright Museum, and all of these organizations, you know, had to pivot. But you did a great job there, and I'm glad to hear that you are doing, trying to get the school children involved with, you know, with virtual engagement.
So
to visit, you need to make a reservation. Are there any, in recognizing none of us know when sort of herd immunity is going to hit, you know, it may be next fall, maybe this fall, it may be July, but clearly you'll keep an eye on it. But is there any other exhibits that you want to reference, recognizing that you may have to pivot for 2021?
Sure. The next one coming up, Tom, is a really interesting project. There's a group, and that's slated for this fall, if we're lucky. And there's a group called the New Hampshire Society of Photographic Artists that are really high-end photographers around the state. They have been on a project the last year and a half to 2 years of cataloging, documenting the entire state of New Hampshire, the natural landscape, the built environment, and people going about their lives. And they're creating an archive of about 7,000 photographs of life all around New Hampshire. They approached us and said, would the society like to hold the archive in our collections? And we said, yeah, this will be great. I mean, I can't imagine 100 years from now for people to be able to look at all these photos to see what life was like in 2020, 2019. In addition, we're collaborating with 7 other exhibiting venues around New Hampshire, including Colby Sawyer College, Plymouth State, Manchester Historic Association, Portsmouth Historical Society, Belmont Mill, Tillotson Center in the North Country, and Historical Society of Cheshire County and Keene. I think I've got them all, along with the New Hampshire Historical Society. We're going to open simultaneous exhibits of these photographs on October 1, and we're creating a publication, a book. It'll be a really beautiful book of these photographs, not all 7,000. They'll be edited, but there'll be several hundred pages of New Hampshire photographs. And it's a very interesting and fun project, and I think people around the state will love it. We got a major corporate sponsor, New Hampshire Mutual Bank Corp, underwrote the project. So we're hoping to open the exhibits on October 1. But in any event, the book will be available no matter what, even if we have to delay the exhibits. And those exhibits will open, as I said, in all those venues around New Hampshire. So, and we'll have an online component. So that's a very, very interesting project, I think, coming up.
That sounds exciting. And like you said, you can still go with it even if you have to pivot. October 1st sounds like it's good. I think it's just my own personal opinion. I'm not a epidemiologist, but I think that's a good date. Although, you know, whether the body politic will be confident, you know, gathering again is a whole different question. But
Yeah, we set that date back before COVID. You know, we set it out in advance. We set it out a little bit, but we're keeping our fingers crossed. Yeah. We just have to, like everybody else in the world, you know, see what happens. And if we have to defer the opening, we will.
But you may have been prescient October 1st.
Yeah, I'm hoping.
So in a couple of minutes left, let's use this as an opportunity for make your pitch for membership and any other, and for if you need any volunteers, docents, or any fundraising campaign. So you got about 2 minutes to cover all that, and then we'll call it a wrap.
Great. Well, we have no fundraising campaigns, specific campaigns at the moment. We've had capital campaigns in the past, major fundraising efforts, but we can always use contributions, obviously. So we have an annual fund, and people can give to the society if they want to help support our work. Just go right on the website or call us up, and we'll mail you whatever you want via the mail. Again, as I said at the beginning of the show, I think membership is not just for somebody who's a sort of a history nerd like I am, but people who just are interested in New Hampshire and love the state. It's another way to really learn about your state, and a lot of what we put out an e-news and a lot of communications to our members. I mentioned our magazine, Historical New Hampshire. They're interesting, and they're not only about the history that took place 100 or 200 years ago, but they're relevant to today. And I think, you know, on a national level, I think some of the tremendous political turmoil we've had in recent years in part is due to the fact that maybe people don't have as much of a recollection or an understanding of how our country works and how we got here. And so being a member of society helps do that. In addition, being a member, the dues are $50 a year if you're an individual member, $75 for families. That money helps pay for us to do all the great stuff we've been talking about, like the educational thing, to deliver, you know, education to all these kids every year, these thousands of kids, and put on exhibits for the community and all the rest. So, you know, it's a way of supporting. It's a philanthropic thing to be a member of society. But you get something in return because we have really great communications.
Awesome. So the mission of the New Hampshire Historical Society is to educate a diverse public about the significance of New Hampshire's past and its relationship to our lives today. In support of this mission, the Society collects, preserves, and interprets materials pertaining to New Hampshire's history. And Bill did a great job describing that. And again, the website for the Moose on the Loose information, moose.nhhistory.org, awesome for, you know, for parents and students alike. Bill, you've done a great job leading it, not only during the pandemic but before, and we're lucky to have you in New Hampshire. So we'll have you on. We'll have you on again, and okay. I recommend to everybody, by the sound of my voice, to become a member. Just know during this sort of COVID period that you have to sign up for visitation time. So, Bill Dunlop, thank you for joining me this weekend.
Thank you, Tom.